Happy Thursday and welcome to our Thursday simulcast. It's kind of in lieu of our weekend simulcast as well, because we're going to be covering the NCAA tournament. And we'll take a look at not only Purdue and what the Boilermakers will be facing on Friday night in Indianapolis, a little spring football, and a little bit of our teams that we might be watching for if you're still filling out your bracket, of which we're all agreeing that we haven't looked at the brackets all that closely, as a lot of people already have those. The tournament starts today. I want to thank our sponsors, the Union Club Hotel at Purdue. It is a Travel and Leisure World's Best Hotel in Indiana nominee. Voting is now open, so visit PurdueUnionClubHotel.com for more details and to show your Purdue pride. And also, if you're interested in subscribing to GoldenBlack.com or becoming a member, please do so. We have free trials available. We've appreciate all the people that have jumped on board of late. It's been really good from that standpoint. And now is a good time as any to become a member of GoldenBlack.com. And Brian, I'll start with you. Obviously, a lot of anticipation here. Friday, the Boilermakers take on the Mean Green of North Texas. It's just this, it is a strange feel, just because media is a little bit different, to say the least. The fact that you know, the team has been down there since early this week, they've settled in, so to speak. But just your initial reaction to what Purdue's going to face down there, but also the challenges of the 2021 tournament.
Yeah, I think you know, this is not an opponent to be taken lightly. Obviously, they got hot at the right time, won their conference tournament. After an interesting season, because a lot of their games against their best, the best teams in their conference got canceled. So that was really, I guess, kind of the first time they had played the upper echelon of Conference USA, was in the postseason tournament, and they won the thing. So obviously, not only are they a pretty solid team, they're a pretty good defensive team, and they're hot at the right time. So that's always, you know, something that, you have to take very seriously this time of year. You have to take everything very seriously this time of year. Matt Painter told his team that there's not a team in this tournament that can't beat you, and there's not a team in this tournament you can't beat. And, you know, I think that that's obviously the approach Purdue has to take here. They can't take anything for granted. This is going to be an uncommon tournament. You know, there might be a couple of little modest advantages baked into this whole thing for Purdue in terms of, you know, playing in Indy for whatever that's worth, playing in a facility, at least in the first game you've already played in, for whatever that's worth, not having to deal with as many travel hassles as everybody else did. Not that that's all that big a deal. But Purdue also has to be way better than it was in the Ohio State game. And that first half was, you know, I think some red flags were raised there in terms of the way they didn't take care of the basketball, the way that they didn't play together on defense, the way they shot free throws. But I wouldn't, you know, I don't think a lot of people would want to be playing Purdue right now, because they got a lot going for them. That they've got, you know, one of the most acute matchup advantages probably you're going to find in the NCAA tournament in terms of Travion Williams and Zach Edey. You have a playmaking guard who has really emerged now, and Jaden Ivey's become sort of the, what Carson Edwards was to those teams a few years ago. And Purdue has a lot going for it here. And I'm just kind of rambling off the rails here about your question, but that's kind of what I got for that first question.
Yeah, Brian, you wrote some stuff talking about the importance of the juniors here in March as well. These are a group of juniors, obviously, that were part of that oh so close loss to Virginia a couple of years ago down in Louisville. And you always like guys who have been there and done that. And again, Travion Williams maybe being a key guy. And again, you talked about that very thing in your weekly word about the personnel matchups Purdue may have with those two big guys. I mean, Zach Edey in particular is a guy, like you said, Brian, he's one thing on film. He's another thing in the flesh and blood, having to deal with a guy of that size and that magnitude. You really can't obviously simulate it. So, I mean, just speak to the difficulties he's going to pose for opponents moving forward here, and what that can mean for the Boilermakers.
Well, a lot of these opponents have never seen a Zach Edey, and a lot of these opponents aren't accustomed to playing against a Travion Williams, somebody as big and physical as he is. Now, he's not as much of a unicorn as Zach Edey is, but the combination thereof, you know, is something that is going to be a shock to the system of a lot of these teams that have to figure this out in a very short period of time. That can go both ways, though, too, because yeah. all of a sudden the other team throws something completely funky at you, and it's something you have a hard time adjusting to, or it takes you too long to adjust to it, or it is something that your solution to it comes at the cost of a bunch of turnovers or whatever it might be, or if those guys just don't play well to the point where you're maximizing your advantage, or it gets exposed on defense, or any number of things happen, you know, your advantages can become disadvantages really quickly. But at least in terms of influence on the game, you know, Purdue has two guys there that are going to wield quite a bit of influence on these games. If Purdue can get people in foul trouble, that's, you know, a perfectly reasonable expectation for something that could happen on the positive side of things for Purdue. If the games get called too close by some official who's never seen a Zach Edey in his life before, you know, or doesn't want to allow too much physicality around the basket, then that could really hurt Purdue, because A, not getting the calls you probably deserve would take away from Purdue's advantage. But also, if those guys get in foul trouble, obviously that's not a positive outcome either. So just because something's a matchup advantage on paper doesn't necessarily mean it's going to pan out that way all the time, but it's certainly more likely to than not, I would think.
You know, Matt Painter is, he wrote also about him being kind of a, you know, he's the stability and has been in this a long time. He's learned also, I think he's talked about it. The fact that he talked about, you know, we can't look past anybody, and you know, Purdue fans have the Little Rock game to look back at and be worried about. If you're a worrisome Purdue fan, that has no comparison to what you're going to see on Friday, but it may have had an impact. I'm not saying Purdue looked past Little Rock. I'm just saying Matt Painter has said, you know, this is it's the one shot deal, and you got to put all your eggs in one basket for North Texas. Talk about his role here. And, you know, he's now an over 50-year-old coach that's been at the same place for a long time, been a lot of NCAA tournaments. That has to be an advantage for Purdue.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it's still just basketball, but I think that, you know, if you go back 2 years ago, this team's in a little bit of a similar situation to that team in the sense that nobody expected much from them early in the year. You had a lot of new guys in new roles, not necessarily new guys then, but guys in new roles, all of that stuff. And nothing was expected of them before the season. They had a great season to the surprise of many. This team is largely in the same sort of position.
Yeah.
And I think what really, you know, helped that team was, as I've heard a lot of people describe it now, was sort of the sense of calm and the level head and the looseness that the head coach projected onto his team. And that team played with a certain carefree nature, and they had a lot of fun in that NCAA tournament. No one wanted that season to end because they were having so much damn fun. On top of the fact that obviously they wanted to win, but that team for the most part was a pretty joyful team playing. And I think a lot of that came from the head coach, and that wasn't necessarily his reputation all the time. I think people had this thought in mind that Matt Painter was this guy who clammed up in March. I don't know if that was ever reality, but I think that's sort of the way people perceived him. I never really got that sense, but what do I know? But I think that what he's been lately has been the opposite of what people maybe thought he was back in the day. I think he's just kind of cool about everything this time of year. I think he's just really laid back. I think he's really wise. I think he's really calm. And I think at least the last time out, he projected that onto his team, and it really, really benefited them. Now, that team played with a certain edge to them that I think trickled down from Carson Edwards, a certain fearlessness. Yeah, I think that was part of it. But I also think there was a certain looseness in that team that really, really helped them. And I've heard it described many times from many different people that had a lot to do with the way the head coach kind of approached things.
Yeah, I think it's a big factor. I know that losses to Cincinnati and Little Rock, you know, the situational, Matt Painter's record in the NCAA tournament really is, even going back to the Hummel days, they did what they were supposed to do. And that's, and then and of course, obviously in 2019, Purdue exceeded expectations and became second away from making the Final Four. Tom, we'll look at you and I are observers maybe more to this, but watching the NCAA tournament's a great time of year. It's fun even in West Lafayette to, in a strange world that it is, that you see the buses coming in, and what is it? There's going to be six games in Mackey Arena, that you have the Ross Age Stadium scoreboards on with the NCAA March Madness logo, et cetera. So there's a little bit of there's excitement about it. It's just a weird deal because it's something you can see, but you can't, most people can't really touch. But yet there's a tournament going on, and that some of the teams that from your perspective that you're going to watch for, if you're filling out your bracket, that are going to be interesting for you to see that might be able to make a run. Your guess is as good as mine on this one.
Yeah, first, 1980, last time there actually were NCAA men's games in Mackey Arena. Alan, you remember that. I remember that. That's where Purdue began. It's marched the Final Four, beating, I think, LaSalle and St. John's.
Right, Louis Carnesecca.
41 years later, cool event. I like what Brian wrote about, too, this week, about the notion of maybe, how about having some of these, making a tradition to have some of these first and second round sites be college towns. I love that. I really love that. I'm not a fan of going to these 18,000-seat arenas in large metro areas that largely don't care. Tap into the college atmosphere that makes the sport so special. That's why I love college sports more than the pros, is that passion, the youthfulness of it that these communities bring. But I digress. Yeah, the bracket, guys. You know, there's a few teams that a lot of people are sort of hot on. Myself, I like the two teams out of the SEC, Arkansas and LSU. A lot, of course, Arkansas is in Purdue's South region. Playing very well. And LSU, guys, I know they're just an 8 seed. They can get by St. Bonaventure. They may be facing Michigan the next round, guys. I think we all can agree, most experts agree, that Michigan could be very vulnerable without Isaiah Livers. Who knows? LSU could be an 8 seed that makes it to the second weekend. Oklahoma State out of the Midwest, too, playing pretty well. I think a lot of people seem to think, yeah, they're a 4 seed. Maybe they're even underseeded as a 4 seed too. And guys, I guess the one double digit seed a lot of people are excited about is Ohio. They've got Virginia, guys, 4 seed. If you follow the news, you know the issues the Cavaliers are dealing with COVID right now, unable to practice. I don't think they're going to get to any till Friday, I believe I heard. So who knows what condition, you know, they're going to be. Ohio is a very good team out of the MAC. Could, if they get by UVA, maybe they have Creighton the next round. I mean, who knows? I mean, you could have a 13-seeded Bobcat team. So those are some teams that you know, maybe aren't top 2 or 3 seeds. I think that a lot of people are sort of liking, and from my research, my reading, my watching of these games, seem to be at least some squads I'm going to be watching these next few days.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Thursday, you know, historically, this was it is going to be a somewhat of a full day because of the first 4 games, but not like it is usually. And the tournament has been moved back or kind of reassembled. It, again, nothing's normal. You know, one team that I like, that just because I like the way they looked when Purdue played them as much as any, is Rutgers. Has an interesting draw. I like that team a lot. And yet you're right about one thing, COVID, well, stating the obvious here, COVID is just the great equalizer. We don't know where teams are going to be. And everybody's counting Michigan out. You're right about the LSU game and LSU's passing the eye test, et cetera. That's going to be interesting. I'm really like Illinois. I've liked Illinois all along. That's not a great pick because a lot of people like Illinois to win it all. But there's somebody out there that, like you said, like in Ohio, somebody this year that is going to be a surprise just because of this crazy world we're living in, but also the typical nature of the tournament, the old 12-5 sequence that has historically fallen. I think what Ohio's a 13, but that is that's going to be an interesting thing to follow. Brian, I know you've been busy covering Purdue, but anybody else out there of all the teams you've watched this year, and certainly in the Big Ten, anybody that you're talking that you think, well, maybe somebody's counting out a little bit, but that you like to see make a run?
Not really. I mean, I really like Illinois, obviously, like everybody else. I'd be surprised if they're not at least in the Final Four. I wouldn't count out anybody from the Big Ten, to be honest with you, because I think once all of these, I've said this before here, but once all of these Big Ten teams get away from one another, you know, and stop beating on one another, I think that things are going to get a little bit easier on them. And I think it's the old saying, where players say that when we get to competition, our practices are harder than the competition. Well, you know, what the Big Ten has been doing for the last 3 months is going to be more challenging, will have been more challenging than almost anything they can face from here on out. So it wouldn't surprise me if a Maryland or a I'm suddenly blanking on
State, maybe
Ohio State, whoever it may be, if one of those teams gets hot at the right time, makes a bunch of threes or whatever, can execute their offense a little bit better than they could during the Big Ten season, because they're not getting, you know, they're not getting elbowed in the face every time they try to come off a dribble handoff and nobody's calling a foul. I think that that worked for Purdue 2 years ago. I think as soon as you got out of the Big Ten and all of those teams knowing everything you were going to do and knowing exactly, you know, how to keep Carson Edwards from doing Carson Edwards things, I think that you saw what happened. And I'm not necessarily saying that if the Big Ten hadn't guarded Carson Edwards a certain way all season long, he would have averaged 38 points a game for the season. But I think you saw Villanova have no idea how to guard Purdue's offensive actions. And I think that's just going to be the nature of the Big Ten here this year, where once you get away from that level of scouting, once you get away from that level of coaching, and once you get away from that level of physicality and defense, things are going to get easier. So it wouldn't surprise me one bit if some rando from the Big Ten, you know, ends up going to the Final Four that nobody would have expected. And that's kind of a mouthful, because there are a bunch of people in this league this year that nobody would be surprised if they got to the Final Four. And to be honest with you, I think nationally Purdue might be one of those teams. I don't know if anybody's going to bat their eye this year if that happens. So I don't know how many teams would even qualify as a rando from the Big Ten anymore.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But I think the Big Ten might be set up for success here.
Michael Wilbon, I know, is, I think, picked Purdue in the Final Four. And again, from a national talking point standpoint, there certainly have been folks that have done that, have put him at that level or Elite Eight or whatever. Not that that matters. None of this matters. It's just kind of the fun of this tournament in terms of that and seeing what does in fact transpire when we see games played. And you know, I think there are teams out there that there's always a storyline. There's a Sister Jean storyline every year in some form, and it might be you know, who knows where that's going to end up being when it comes to tournament time. We'll start to find out later today. I think 3 o'clock the first game. I want to no, 6 o'clock I think is the first game in Mackey Arena for the tournament. So Tom, it took last day of spring football. They had good weather, at least the last couple of days, but it's gonna be colder tomorrow. I think they'll probably be out for the outside still for the last scrimmage, but you know, hard to glean exactly, but Jeff Brohm seems to have they've made some progress, at least from his perspective, and it's all going to wrap up literally before the first day of spring with the scrimmage tomorrow in Ross, or I don't know if it's going to be in Ross 8 Stadium, but it's going to be a scrimmage.
Yeah, third and final scrimmage of this spring season for the Boilermakers. Like you said, Alan, officially the spring season doesn't start until Sunday, I guess, officially as far as the calendar goes. People will have that in the books. And you're right, you know, it's hard to glean too much from spring practice, especially with so many guys missing it because of injuries and whatnot. But still, talking to Coach Brohm and others, you know, you get a sense there is some optimism. So much to get done on defense. We all know that, guys, with the three new assistant coaches. Of course, we expect a fourth new assistant defensive coach to be hired soon after spring drills concludes here on March 19th to fill Anthony Poindexter's job. So again, early signs on the defense are encouraging, but again, a lot of key guys were out. And offensively, fellas, the big key, I think, is that offensive line getting more physical, knocking people backward, becoming better in the run game. And while the line may not be Brohm's most talented, it certainly has its more depth than he's ever had. So there's more possible options to play up front. They seem encouraged by that too. So yeah, guys, I think by and large, it seems like it's been a pretty successful spring. There's still a lot of work to do. I think this roster still is going to have some change. that impacts it here moving forward here via the portal. Maybe some guys are going to leave after spring practice. And again, I think Purdue's still shopping the portal too. So a lot of moving parts for the Boilermakers still as they, you know, look to punctuate the end of the spring session on Friday.
All right, five new folks that have come to Purdue from the portal, and that's obviously a storyline we'll be watching. All right, we because our simulcast last week was midweek as well. It was prior to the Drew Brees announcement, and Brian, I'll start with you. And it's a hard thing to put into a few words, I suppose. But Drew Brees makes his announcement through his kids on Instagram on the 14th or whatever, if that's right, the date that was. And yet, hard to minimize. No one's going to minimize his impact at Purdue. What I guess my question for you is, what do you think? You know, we know he's going to work for NBC and do some of that, but what do you think he's going to, how much do you think he still is involved at Purdue? And do you see that being more, or is it just one of those things we may find out in the next 2 to 3 years, how he settles in? I mean, he's obviously been extremely involved with the Purdue football program since he's left Purdue.
Well, I don't see why it would change. You know, he might not be quite as visible as he was when he was playing. But I mean, if he didn't turn his back on Purdue when Purdue was winning one game a year,
yeah,
and he had no incentive whatsoever to associate his brand with anything that wasn't excellent, I don't know why he would, you know, turn his back on Purdue now. He might have a more open schedule. I don't know. He might be around to do Notre Dame games more for all we know. So he might be able to pass through West Lafayette more often. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure he's going to keep plenty busy and, you know, quote unquote retirement. But I don't see why he would not be involved in, why he wouldn't be involved with Purdue any less than he already has been.
Yeah. I think it's an interesting, he certainly has, your point about being around Purdue, and we still have the photo from, I think it was the Illinois game in 2013 when he was there, and there was about 10 people in the stands, but he was still, you know, front and center, did shout that game, as I recall. And that's, I think, is an excellent point about what Purdue will probably expect from Drew Brees down the road. You know, Tom, you know, you wrote about your experience with him in 2000, but also some of the best games that, you know, just putting this guy, the way he put a Band-Aid on this program and kept to some extent. I mean, he's been the face of the program really since maybe arguably, I mean, it hasn't changed since 1998, really, in a lot of ways. I mean, if you think of Purdue football, you're fortunate enough to think of Drew Brees. That legacy is going to go, is still going to be something that Jeff Brohm and company will try to utilize as much as possible in an honest way throughout from now till the end of time, so to speak.
I mean, I don't think Purdue's ever had a more impactful football player. I mean, from a personality standpoint, from what he meant to the program. I don't think that can ever be overstated. Like you said, Alan, it resonates today, some 20 years later, right? And didn't just transform Purdue football, helped transform Big Ten football, you know, along with Joe Tiller's arrival in 1997. And look what football continues to become, such a passing game. And again, Brees and Tiller helped really usher in that to the 3 yards in a cloud of dust league that the Big Ten always was known to be. So, yeah, I mean, my gosh, you know, as a kid growing up, you know, it was always Bob Greasy, right? He was sort of the face of Purdue football, past and present, those Super Bowls with the Dolphins and whatnot. But, man, I tell you what, Drew Brees has really supersedes anybody, at least in my mind, for what he means to school, how big of a personality he is and will continue to be, guys, moving forward here. I know he's still gonna have a busy schedule, he still has a job, he still has kids to raise, but like Brian noted, you noted, I think he's still always going to find time for a university that obviously means a lot to him and his wife. So it's going to be cool to just watch that relationship change and continue to morph here moving forward.
Yeah, it's going to be a storyline. He's not going away, and I think his involvement will probably likely be strategically increased, I guess the term I would use. So, all right, guys, we'll put a close to this, and we will look forward to, if you're a Purdue basketball fan, we'll hope to be talking Purdue basketball next week on our simulcast, maybe prior to the regionals finals, and we'll see how that all lands for the Boilermakers. Brian, Tom, thanks so much. I want to thank the Purdue Union Club Hotel, Travel and Leisure World's Best Hotel in Indiana nominee. Make sure you vote at PurdueUnionClubHotel.com for more information on how you can cast your vote for them in that contest, so to speak. And we also want to remind you that you can subscribe or become a member of goldenblack.com, 45-day free trials, and you can as well. And we will look forward to all the folks that join us and keep make us what we are. We appreciate that very much. So have a great week, everybody. Enjoy the NCAA tournament, and we'll look forward to talking again next week.